Hey, Chameleon listeners. Josh Dean here to tell you about a new podcast I'm hosting that just dropped on The Binge. Cover Up, The Anthrax Threat. If you're like me, you probably remember the anthrax attacks of 2001. I'm sure you recall seeing headline after headline about this mysterious, deadly bioweapon coming in through the mail, and remember feeling tensions rising with each laced letter that was discovered. What you won't remember is the part of the story that unfolded behind closed doors and this season on Cover Up, The Anthrax Threat. That's exactly the story we're telling. Join me as we unravel the high-stakes investigation behind the 2001 anthrax attacks that had the entire nation on edge. In government buildings, the FBI was in a race against time to find who was responsible for these poison letters. And did they actually do that? Well, the answer isn't so simple. Uncover the truth on Cover Up, The Anthrax Threat, available now. Listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts, and if you're a subscriber to The Binge, you can enjoy all episodes ad-free today. Take a listen. In October 2001, a month after the September 11th attacks, a series of letters filled with a deadly powdered bacteria called anthrax landed on the desks of prominent journalists and politicians in New York City and Washington, D.C. The anthrax in those letters killed 5 people. 17 others were infected. It was the worst act of bioterrorism in American history. And the weeks and months around those attacks unsettled American society in a truly profound way. I was living in New York City at the time of the anthrax attacks, working in media for a major magazine publisher in the same zip code as NBC News, Fox News, and what was then known as Time Inc., publisher of giant titles like Time, Sports Illustrated, and People. And the fear those letters spread, the idea that you could die just by opening the mail, is one of my most visceral memories of that time. The days after 9/11, when it seemed like the whole world had been turned upside down.
You know, I remember talking to friends I had back in Indiana, you know, 4 or 5 days after 9/11, and how you guys doing out there? And they go, what are you talking about? We went back to normal the next day. It didn't impact them directly.
Jim Rice was head of the FBI's domestic response team in D.C. at the time. This was the Bureau's quick reaction squad, made up of expert biologists, hackers, bomb diffusers, divers, you name it. Whatever the crisis was, Jim was ready to respond.
This was different because it involved the mail system, the postal system. Everybody's got a mailbox. Everybody gets mail. This brought the threat of terrorism home to, I think, the American public in a way that 9/11 even could not. You know, people who lived in Slippery Rock, Arkansas, were not concerned that terrorists were going to fly a plane into the local civic center. You know, however, they were really concerned that they might get something in the mail.
Most people these days remember the attacks and all the finger pointing that followed.
Mr. Bin Laden is an evil man. We're making sure that we connect any dots that we have to find out who's doing this.
The gravity of this moment is matched by the gravity of the threat that Iraq's weapons of mass destruction pose to the world.
But fewer people remember the FBI's investigation into the attacks, in all its costly rabbit holes, damaging leaks, and embarrassing mistakes.
If the FBI does not have me as a person of interest, then what does it have? What it has is a stalled investigation.
I needed to prove I was innocent. Not that they needed to prove I was guilty, but I needed to prove I was innocent.
If there was a PTSD, it's not from the raid, it's from those events.
And almost no one remembers this press conference in 2008, 7 years after the mailings.
As the department indicated last week and has been widely reported, substantial progress has been made in the Amerithrax investigation in recent years.
When the FBI announced on national television that they had finally caught the killer, an American scientist named Bruce Ivins. Dr. Bruce Ivins was a scientist at a U.S. Army biowarfare lab and one of the world's foremost anthrax experts. For years, he'd worked with the FBI on the case. But now they were claiming that Dr. Ivins, the very person who'd once helped them investigate the attacks, was actually responsible for them.
We are confident that Dr. Ivins was the only person responsible for these attacks. We are now beginning the process of concluding this investigation. Once this process is complete, we will formally close the case.
But Dr. Ivins was never charged with the crime. And that's because a week before the announcement, he killed himself.
Dr. Ivins died of an overdose on July 29, 2008, and at the time of his death was the sole suspect in the case.
Publicly naming a suspect after his death was highly unusual for the FBI. They never had to try their case in court, and Dr. Ivins would never be able to defend himself, a fundamental civil right and a pillar of the American criminal justice system, innocent until proven guilty. And yet,
we had been in conversations with his attorneys regarding the direction of the investigation because we believed that based on the evidence we had collected, we could prove his guilt to a jury beyond a reasonable doubt.
The FBI claimed that if Bruce Ivins had lived, their case against him would have been a slam dunk. They thought closing the case posthumously would put a period at the end of one of the longest, most complex cases in FBI history. But instead, it left a question mark that's lingered ever since. Search for Cover Up, the Anthrax Threat, wherever you get your podcasts. Start listening today.